We're hosting Simona Dinnerstein, a pianist from New York. She's been here before, played Mozart with us. We had a really nice time together, and I got a note from her a couple of years ago that she had an opportunity to get some orchestras involved in a commissioning project. And I got back in touch with her. We had some exchanges and talked about this project that she was developing with Philip Glass. And Philip Glass, of course, is really one of the most well-known and important living American composers and has really an amazing body of work, mainly sort of minimalist in style, but he's sort of developed a little bit different, kind of slightly warmer quality to his music as he's aged and matured. And so she developed this project to commission a new concerto for piano and was looking to have a number of orchestras involved. I think about 7 or 8 orchestras got involved in this project, and we managed to get all the funds together and commission this work from Philip Glass, which was premiered a year ago. So it's been kind of bouncing around with the orchestras that have been involved in the commission. I think that will go on a little longer, and then I'm guessing it'll get out there and into the general programming with orchestras that weren't involved in this commission. So very exciting for us to be involved in something like this.
And this work was very well received, and in fact, she's made a recording of it.
Yeah, exactly. When it was first performed, it was quite well received, and I believe that group that gave the first performance also did a recording with Simona. It's a wonderful chamber orchestra in Boston called A Far Cry, which doesn't use a conductor. They just have a different model of artistic leadership, and they feature some really nice collaborations with soloists, and this was one of them. So they made a very nice recording of this and a Bach concerto, which I believe Glass kind of had in mind this companion Bach concerto when he was writing the piece. My understanding actually is that Philip Glass's piece came out quite a bit longer than he expected. It's a nice recording that pairs those two pieces. And I think it kind of shot up the classical Billboard charts when it first came out and got some nice press. And so that's even better for us. I think our name's on the inside of the CD jacket, which is great. So it's nice to see this project gaining some recognition and to have a new work be so successful.
Well, Simona Dinnerstein sort of kicked off her career a little over 10 years ago with the music of Bach.
That's right. She really kind of came to prominence through a recording of the Goldberg Variations, and I think she went around performing it as well quite a bit. And, you know, it's such an interesting territory, and that piece in particular for pianists to play, because, you know, the piano as a modern instrument didn't exist in Bach's lifetime. So there's all kinds of conversation about his keyboard music and what he intended, what he would have done had he had this or that instrument available. So I think it's wonderful to have, you know, modern pianists performing and recording Bach's music. And in Simona's case, you know, it was just a wonderful match. Her temperament for that piece, I think, gave listeners something that we hadn't heard before in the Goldberg Variations. And so it ended up being very interesting recording and quite a contrast to some of the other well-known recordings, and kind of launched her career, which has since gone from one success to another. She recently did a really great project with a music school in Cuba featuring the music of Mozart, which is just looked absolutely wonderful, and she also has an affinity for that music as well. So that was a really nice one to observe from afar. And she's done some crossover stuff as well. So really kind of an interesting range for her. And none of the projects she selects are kind of just sort of everyday, you know, we'll do the same old thing that was done before. There's always an interesting twist to it or something new. And I really like that about Simona's work.
So tell us about this concerto. And apparently Philip Glass heard her play and wanted to write this concerto for her.
Yeah, I guess he had gotten to know her playing a little bit. So this is his third piano concerto. It's not like he just decided, oh, well, I like Simona's playing. I'm going to write a piece. He's been inspired by a couple other pianists as well and has written some quite diverse works for piano, whether they be concertos or solo piano. In this case, it's actually in form a fairly traditional piece. It's a 3-movement concerto. The first movement, faster, kind of expansive, developed movement. The second movement is a slower movement, which you'd expect. And the third movement is actually a in memoriam for Ervo Part, the Estonian composer. So it has a sort of a meditative tinge to it. And in general, you know, I think audiences are really going to be surprised by how much they enjoy hearing this piece. You know, first of all, new music in general has a reputation for being difficult to listen to or hard to understand at the first hearing. That's really not the case with this piece. It's quite accessible. And it's the kind of work that I think if you let yourself be borne along with the music, will give a very similar impression to listening to something like Tchaikovsky. You know, the music really unfolds at a similar type of pace and scale. There's kind of this note of romanticism that's moved into his musical language. So the minimalist element is still there. And I think there's a decent amount of the technique that he developed over the years, you know, when he was really kind of at the forefront of that movement earlier in his career. But also kind of, I think, in a way for the listener, sort of a softening of the more dogmatic approach of minimalism, which could take very limited elements and just kind of put them together in such a way that they would create this very interesting sound. But sometimes for listeners, it could be maybe a little overwhelming or just a little bit one-dimensional. This piece doesn't feel like that to me. It feels much more like a multifaceted work with a variety of really interesting colors, some of which is really generated through the same minimalist techniques, but it's quite lyrical and got some beautiful melodic aspects too. So I think that's a little bit of a difference to what people might expect, and certainly a development in Glass's style from earlier works, whether for piano, but particularly his earlier minimalist works that we tend to know pretty well because they're such landmarks. Yeah, we're thrilled to present this, and it's kind of a nice opportunity to do something a little bit different. You know, we've given a lot of second or third performances of new works that we didn't commission. We've also commissioned quite a few new pieces by lesser-known composers, some who have gone on to do great things. So this is really wonderful to be involved in a project that brings together the talents of major performing artists and a huge composer in today's world. For us to be in on that is really neat. It's a wonderful opportunity for our community. And of course, it gets our name out there too. It sort of says to folks, hey, look, out in Iowa, there's this orchestra out there that really wants to be doing interesting music with interesting artists. And that's what this is to me.
So tell us about the other two works that will be on this concert.
We're performing two works by Tchaikovsky. We're opening the concert with this overture to Voyevoda, which is a relatively early work of Tchaikovsky's and is not heard very often at all. And Tchaikovsky wrote a number of works called Voyevoda, and he tried to destroy them all. So it's sort of interesting to go back and try and get a handle on, you know, where this music came from and why would Tchaikovsky want to rip the parts up? He just, you know, was quite self-critical, but also, you know, now we look back on him as one of the great composers. So there's really quite a bit of value in hearing all of his music and maybe hearing some of the things he deemed less successful. And that was the goal, actually, to find a work that's interesting to listen to by a really wonderful composer that the audience might never have heard before. You know, that first half, if you think about it, we'll hear this Tchaikovsky overture that nobody knows. And then we're going to hear this relatively new work by Philip Glass, which folks might have bought the album, heard it on the radio, but is also pretty new. And it'll be interesting to see the reactions of unfamiliar Tchaikovsky and unfamiliar new music by Philip Glass. I think people will come away saying that, oh, wow, those were quite similar experiences, or maybe even the Glass was more accessible than the Tchaikovsky. That would be a stretch, but still, we could be having that conversation. So I think it makes a very interesting first half. And then the second half is occupied by Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, which is personally one of my favorite works of his and is often overshadowed by the Fourth and the Sixth. So, you know, the Fifth sometimes gets short shrift among those last three great Tchaikovsky symphonies, but I think it's one of his most interesting works. And certainly from a melodic perspective, to me, this piece has some of the most, you know, really Tchaikovsky-esque melodies in the whole of his output. It's just one after another. These movements are made up of these incredible themes. And they're actually all linked to one main theme, which starts the piece. So it's really quite an achievement how he is able to do that, sustain the interest based on this one theme, and yet pour out all these beautiful melodies from it. Quite a piece to experience, and definitely so much fun to perform this work.
Well, his orchestration and his use of the orchestra is just phenomenal, too. It's such a showcase.
Yeah, this piece in particular features a couple of really amazing solos throughout the wind instruments. The clarinets have a big role, including sort of opening up the whole piece. The French horn has a huge solo, which is just a great beautiful lyrical solo, one of the really great horn solos in the whole orchestral repertoire, some really nice moments for the oboe, and even a couple of cool bassoon solos. So it's really a piece that features the orchestra as well as showcases Tchaikovsky's hands with the whole sections. I mean, there's a beautiful lyrical string writing and some great brass chorale stuff, but also this great solo writing for the solo instruments, and such a great opportunity to highlight our wonderful players and really let the audience get a chance to hear them.
And Tchaikovsky couldn't resist putting in like a scherzo or a waltz as the third movement.
When you look at his last couple of symphonies, what he does with that particular movement is really interesting. You know, the first movements tend to be quite big, slow introduction and then development of themes. The second movements, they vary a little bit in tone, but I would call them fairly typical for slow movements of symphonies. But these third movements are incredibly varied. You know, you've got the fourth symphony, this crazy sort of dream sequence, and features all these little different marches and stuff. And then here you have this really wonderful, I would call it almost like a true waltz, although it has some elements of sort of like the Nutcracker dances throughout its middle section, where you wouldn't really picture people waltzing to it, but you could see sort of snowflakes dancing around. but in general, it just has this beautiful waltz-like character. And of course, several of Tchaikovsky's famous pieces are waltzes from Nutcracker and other works. So it's not a shock, but it's still maybe a little bit different than what happens in some other works. And he has symphonies where the scherzo movement is truly a scherzo, more of an up-tempo piece. So that's quite a contrast, sort of leads into the fourth movement, which kind of takes some time to get going and then finally culminates in this big brass chorale. Reportedly, Tchaikovsky actually didn't like the end of the symphony, but it's kind of rousing and it's fun. I don't know what the big deal was. I think it's really interesting writing, and it's actually really fun to perform and conduct it too.
So how can folks get more details about the WCF's gala season opener along with this acclaimed pianist, Simona Dinnerstein?
Well, find us on our website, which is wcfsymphony.org, or any of the social media outlets, WCF Symphony in particular. We use Facebook quite a bit. And we really are rolling out the red carpet for this one, as they say. We actually are rolling out a red carpet at the lobby of the Gallagher and welcoming people for a really nice pre-concert conversation, which is in the lobby. And then the concert begins at 7 on September 29th, and that's a new time for us. We've been at 7:30 for quite a few years. We're going to move to 7, so just want to make sure everybody's also aware of that. Once they have their tickets, don't show up a half an hour late. We'll begin the concert at 7 o'clock on the 29th.
And what time does that pre-concert chat happen?
And our concert talks will always happen just about an hour before the program. You know, maybe about 6:10 is when we'll start. Right out there in the lobby, we welcome everybody to join us for that.
Thanks for today's chat goes to IPR's Chris Fenton and Alexis Hahn. And of course, a big thanks today to the WCF Symphony's artistic director and conductor, Jason Weinberger, for joining us. And thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.